Hello everyone, Benjamin here. Welcome to an extra edition of Microbe Talk, the podcast from the Microbiology Society. Now, this week is the Summer Science Exhibition, organised by our friends at the Royal Society here in London. We sent Anand Jagatiya along to one of the stands, which was all about killer fungi. Here's Anand talking to the Microbiology Society's president, Professor Neil Gow, who's been leading the exhibit this week.
So, we're here at the Royal Society. What are we looking at here, Neil?
Well, we're looking at what I think might be the world's largest petri dish. Now, a petri dish is something a microbiologist used to grow microbes, and normally they are classically in boxes 9 centimetres exactly in diameter. And this one is, well, what is it? It's 400 by 400 millimetres, and it's a huge square petri dish, and on Saturday it was inoculated. Every day it's different, and today it's screaming out at you the words killer fungus in red, green and white colonies. So you can actually examine these colonies with magnifying glass and see the hairy colonies of the fungi which are growing there. Of course, I want to reassure people we haven't used any killer fungi to make this demonstration. These are all harmless molds, such as the ones that you use to ripen cheeses and yeast, of course, which make bread and beer and alcohol.
So how do you go about inoculating this? Is it a food source that spells out the words and then the fungi grow?
So this is the creative work of a very skilled person in public engagement, a colleague and friend of mine, Patrick Hickey. And Patrick has done this a number of times in different ways in the past, including for Hollywood movies. And what he does is he makes this nutrient jelly, puts it in a big dish, waits for it to set. And then in the background, he back projects a template of what he wants to show. And then he literally paints the colonies on from a solution of the microbes using a cotton wool bud. And then he creates the words, and then the bugs do the rest.
When most people think of, well, me certainly, when I think of fungal diseases, I think of maybe things like athlete's foot or, you know, nail infections. But some fungi are much more dangerous than that. So how much of a problem are fungal diseases?
Well, you're quite right, Anand. In fact, about a third of the world are infected with the sorts of diseases you talk about, but they haven't killed anybody. But nonetheless, they actually do cost a lot of money to treat those infections. A lot of people are very disturbed by having those sorts of type of infections. However, that's not the topic of our stand. These are organisms, a rare group, a small group of organisms, but when they cause disease, they can kill human beings. And the main point we're trying to make here is that when we challenge the general public to tell us about microbes that cause disease, they'll all come up with some old favourites. Everybody will know about the cold and influenza, and they'll have heard maybe about SARS or Ebola or Zika virus. They've heard about MRSA or E. coli, but almost nobody can name the three organisms which we're highlighting here, Candida, Aspergillus and Cryptococcus, which collectively account for about between 1 and 1.5 million deaths every year.
So put that in perspective, how does that compare to other diseases, things like AIDS and tuberculosis?
So if we benchmark against something which tragically we'll all probably know somebody who's perhaps succumbed to breast cancer in our families, but that would be a number worldwide which would only be a half to a third of the number of total deaths caused by fungal infection, something which always surprises people. Everybody knows about malaria, but fungal infections are more than double the number of people die of fungal infections than malaria. Malaria is on the way down. And even HIV, there's now excellent treatments for HIV, and the burden is steadily falling, and we're now at a world figure of about 1.3 million, which is about the same as fungal infections, as is the total world burden for tuberculosis, which of course many people will know of. It's still considered the number one health challenge as an infectious disease. So these numbers are tragically very comparable with even the most famous of the infectious agents which are killing people on the planet today.
Why is it, do you think, that fungal diseases have been so underappreciated? Why aren't people more aware of the damage and the burden to global health that they pose?
Well, I would think there's two things that we need to think about. First of all, HIV/AIDS changed everything and created an entirely new population of people around the world who are susceptible to diseases that they otherwise would fend off quite naturally. So we're actually looking at a mannequin which is showing some yeast cells which are infecting the brain and the central nervous system of people. this is a type of meningitis. And we all know about meningitis, but we think of it in terms of viruses or bacteria. But fungal meningitis is very important. And in sub-Saharan Africa, that figure alone for that single type of organism has got to be at least 600,000 deaths a year. So although things like the Ebola virus hit the headlines in a dramatic way, and of course it was an extremely worrying health problem of its time, the number of people who were killed the same year with cryptococcal meningitis was about 30 times the total number of people who died of Ebola virus. And sadly, the same number the year before and the next year, and until we do something about it, into the future as well.
So why is it that people with compromised immune systems are at risk from fatal infections from these fungi?
So it turns out that we are, as an organism, human beings, challenged by fungi all the time. We're looking around at a room full of maybe 150 people or so. And if they represent a normal general public, about 50% of those are carrying candida, but without any serious effects whatsoever. However, they are pre-inoculated, and if their immune system goes down, it's ready to go. Similarly, there are spores floating around in this room, and we estimate that every human being here today will be sucking into their lungs at least 150 spores a day of Aspergillus fumigatus, a fungus which causes severe lung infection and severe asthma, accounting for more than estimated 400,000 deaths per year. And when that fungus causes an infection, it's so difficult to treat that certain patient groups, only 10 or 20% of those patients are going to survive, even if our doctors are knowing what they have and throw at them everything that is in the healthcare cabinet.
What kind of treatments are available? Do we have vaccines? Do we have antifungals in the same way that we have antibacterial compounds?
Well, let's start with vaccines, because that's going to be quick. There are no vaccines at all for any fungus in the world. There is research, and there's no reason why vaccine technology might be able to make a significant difference, but at the moment, the cabinet is completely bare. Antifungal drugs, we've got a whole range of them, and the good news is there are some new ones coming on stream soon, which will improve the performance of those classes of drugs. But everybody would say in this field that there is nothing as good as something like penicillin is, which of course attacks bacteria, something which kills the majority of bacteria so they can't recover. Many of our drugs actually just arrest the fungus and stop it growing, and you need a healthy immune system to see it off. So there are windows of vulnerability when that doesn't occur. So we definitely need new drugs and better drugs, or better ways of administering drugs, or better combinations of drugs. The last thing we need to talk about a little bit is dealing with recognizing when a fungus is there, diagnostics. So the catchphrase here would be slow diagnosis, poor prognosis. And often fungal infections are presenting with some similar symptoms to other diseases. For example, fever. And a doctor may say, okay, they have a bacterium or a virus, and set about trying to make the appropriate treatment, and realize only when that treatment fails that actually it might be something else like a fungus. By that time, the fungus has grown and the chances of saving that patient have diminished. And so we still really need to improve our repertoire of diagnostics, particularly ones which are easy to use and can be used in any setting, not just in an advanced medical hospital, because, as we said before, many of the people who've got fungal infections are in low or middle income countries, they're in field situations, they don't have access to good primary medical care.
A good example of such a country is Malawi, which has high levels of endemic fungal infections due to HIV and AIDS. One of the researchers on the stand is Alfred Kamayango, a student from Malawi currently doing a PhD at Sheffield University. Alfred is one of the winners of a Wellcome Trust Strategic Award that aims to build capacity and research excellence in medical mycology and fungal immunology.
Cryptococcus, like many fungi, produces spores that are found in the air that we breathe. So these spores are inhaled into our lungs, but they do not cause any harm because of our immune defenses. However, when somebody's immune system is weakened, these fungus can cause life-threatening infections. For example, individuals that have AIDS or have had an organ transplant. So I am interested in immune cells called macrophages that are needed for immune defense against Cryptococcus. It is impossible to see how infections happen during infection because we do not have see-through borders. So we are using zebrafish to study this particular thing. So zebrafish have a similar immune system like our own, but are transparent, which makes it possible to see how infections happen. Using zebrafish, we are testing new ways to enhance immune cells. And ultimately, these investigations may lead to development of novel therapies to cryptococcal infections.
So when you finish next year in Sheffield, what are you hoping to take back with you to Malawi?
So when I finish my PhD, the skills I've learned in research, I would like to build my research group in Malawi. I'm looking at this same fungus, Cryptococcus neophomans, because it's prevalent in Malawi because of HIV. And trying to make the contacts I've developed here to make some research collaboration, and where things that cannot be done in Malawi could be done in laboratories in the UK. And also to be able to apply for grants, which could be able to do more research that would be beneficial to people, for example, in terms of policy changes, depending on the findings in this research I'll be doing when I get back to Malawi.
How have you found talking to members of the public about your research on the stand here?
It's been very interesting, and I've had a lot of people asking brilliant questions, and it's really great to see how people that do not know about fungal infections, most people know about malaria, know about TB, but they do not know about fungal infections. And it's been a great pleasure to tell them about fungal infections, and people are able now to appreciate research that's being done in the UK in trying to tackle this problem.
That's it for this edition. Thanks for listening. We'll be back later in the month with our regular episode.